These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Conduits of Trouble time, which means it's Zolgad and Chip Scoggins, Declan Goff, executive producing as he does for all of our Score North content. Chip Scoggins, definitely want to discuss what has gone wrong with the Twins with you. But since it's draft week, and since we are the former Access Vikings team, and it's one of the most exciting times when Rick Spielman does his, well, now it's a Zoom call, it used to be a press conference, and gets up there and spills his guts and tells us there is nobody that he wouldn't draft. What do your spidey senses tell you about what the Vikings are going to do tomorrow night?
Wait a second. Are you reading my column that I'm writing right now?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I've got this new app. It's just called Read Chip. And as you're writing, it just filters right onto my app there.
My lead was about Rick and his pre-draft press conference, how he cut open a vein and in a moment of weakness told us everything he's going to do. Might trade up, might trade down, might trade sideways, might stand still.
Yep. Might stand on his head.
Anybody, even a kicker. We're going to take a kicker this year. Or he's open to it.
SEC kicker.
Down, obviously. Yeah, that's right.
SEC, nowhere else.
I think my gut is they take their best offensive lineman available there at 14, whether that's one of the tackles or the guard from USC, Vera Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
I think he takes a third-round pick and or fourth-round or whatever those mid-rounds and tries to get up into the second round and takes either another offensive lineman or a rush end. But I think he definitely will try to. Can you see him, honestly, Judd,
sure,
sitting there from 14 to 78 and doing nothing?
No, hell no.
Yeah. So he's going to, whatever it takes. I mean, we know how much he loves draft picks and how he tries to get 10 to whatever, you know, last year 15. I think this is a year where he uses some of those draft capital to move up and try to get in that second round
mm-hmm.
to get a more high impact player. Because, you know, they need a couple of impact starters out of this draft, I think. Offensive lineman for sure. They, you know, whether they add another veteran after this, you know, another guy gets cut after the draft or whatever, but they need two new starters on the offensive line. You either need a left tackle or a right tackle if O'Neal moves over there, and you need a left guard. So you need two new starters. And I think Zimmer will want a pass rushing end in a high round two. So that's my hunch.
Okay.
How about you?
I think that, okay, so here's my question, okay? And personally, I think the top QBs are all going to be gone because I think teams will come up and get them, okay? So if Trey Lance or Fields, who's got a ton of smoke screens around him, right? If they mm-hmm. start to fall, I think somebody comes up and gets them. But let's just say for fun that, you know, Justin Fields falls. And he's at 14, and it's the Vikings pick. I personally would be very tempted to take him. I yes. feel like what Spielman would do is trade back
yes.
and get a first-round pick, a second-round pick from a desperate team, and not take the QB. But I am curious because let's say they sat there at 14 and took Vera Tucker or took a defensive end. The blowback, I think, could be incredible. Yeah. I don't know they care, but I do think that if you pass on a quarterback and make that pick at 14 and it's Elijah Vera Tucker, that the consternation among Vikings fans would be incredibly high.
Yeah, it's, you know, they may not be here when you find out if that quarterback's, you know,
that's why.
A star.
Yes.
But I, how much of this is, and it hasn't been said publicly by the Wilfs, and I don't think it will, but this feels like an ultimatum season to me, doesn't you? I mean,
yes, the pressure.
Because if you don't make the playoffs, that's going to be two years in a row and three of the last four. I just can't see the ownership saying, you know what, we're going to ride this out at that point. So I think there's this urgency, right, to really – you saw it in free agency. I mean, they fixed that defense pretty dramatically, you know. And some of that was just guys coming back from injury or opt-outs. But being aggressive, you know, on that side of the ball to give Zimmer what he wanted to fix his defense. But I think there's also this urgency that, hey, they better fix this offensive line or find new starters there because they need to win. And, you know, I don't know that just getting in the playoffs is going to be enough. And so if you take a quarterback, you're not filling the pretty big hole that you have.
Yes.
You're preparing for a future that you may not have.
No, you're right.
With the team. And so I don't know. There'd be pressure. You know, those 10 minutes would be, I'm sure, anxious for them about do they do it. But I just think, you know, you're not going to bench Cousins this year. And so,
right.
And so, you're, as I said, you're preparing for something you may not get to even coach and be around. So I agree with you. If that scenario happened, I wouldn't be surprised if they did trade back and try to get their second rounder that way.
I think this discussion would be a lot more fun if they hadn't made the Ngakoue trade and sure. and traded the second round pick to the Jaguars, because then it might be a little bit more, well, you've got a second round pick, but
sure,
but I could see Spielman and Zim both being very satisfied to say that the Patriots or Washington's going to come up and get our pick for this. So
yeah, that changes things. Say, yeah. Cause if you had that second round pick, you could say, you know, and we heard, I think, Spielman, when he kept saying there's a position that's really deep, I think he was alluding to the offensive line. I think you could probably talk yourself into saying, all right, we'll take a quarterback in the first round. We'll get our offensive lineman who's not that far behind, you know, maybe the first round guys that we had, and we'll do him in the second round. But without that, I don't think you could wait till the third round to take an offensive lineman and think that you're really
no.
in the hole. You know, I don't think that that's an option. But didn't he find it? Did you listen to Spielman yesterday?
Yep, I sure did.
He did when he was answering stuff. You know, he did slide in there. He's like, well, just want to remind you that once the draft is over, you're not done with your roster, and there's still, you know, you can still add a veterans that come open, and you can still supplement. So that led me to believe that, you know, they still think that there's going to be some veterans that get cut.
Is that left tackle, Chip? Because Okung is still out there. Fisher is still there, and I'm not saying that they're going to get them, but I couldn't decide if I can't. It seemed like he was hedging his bets about the left tackle position there a little bit to say, yeah. Well, if we don't take one, which leads me to ask this, would they, if there's a quarterback there at 14 and they trade back, would they take a defensive end in the 20s? Because I think that the defensive ends do fit in that area of the draft pretty nicely. And you know what? I mean, with how Mike operates, I'm never going to completely dismiss that they're done yeah. taking defensive players where there at least is still a need.
The only problem with that line of thinking is you're not guaranteed to get those guys. I mean, the draft, you're guaranteed. You're guaranteed who you're going to get if you're on the clock there. If you say, oh, you know, we'll sign one of those veterans in you know, after the draft. Well, what if they have options too? What if Fisher has getting a bidding war or they want to go somewhere else? So you're not, I don't think you can count on that as your number one plan. I think it's, you know, it's nice if you can supplement and do that. And he also might've been talking about cornerback too, because, you know, this Gladney situation, he didn't really address it yesterday. He just said they, you know, they put out a statement and they're waiting for the legal.
We put out a statement.
Yeah, but I, what is his status, you know? So now you may be in the market for at least another draft pick or another veteran that you sign that might get cut. Because, you know, I don't think you can count on Mike Hughes at this point, really.
No.
And so that leaves you with Dantzler and who else?
McKenzie's back. Patrick Peterson is going to start almost for sure, I think, outside.
But so, I think, yeah, your top three, if you take Gladney out, you got Patrick Peterson, McKenzie, and Dantzler, which,
yep.
you know, that's pretty good. But I think you would ideally want a fourth, or maybe, you know.
You've got to have depth. Absolutely.
So I wouldn't put it past, you know, I think he was talking about offensive line, but he also could have been alluding to secondary, too.
So, Chipper, the left tackle or the O-line solutions, as far as I can go through and try and deduct them, are threefold. One is the draft. You just take care of it with the 14th pick, which is, you know, very possible. The second one is what we just discussed, which is you get done with the draft, you didn't take one high, and so there is a veteran out there that can still be signed. That's the second option. And the third one is that there is some sort of, and I'm guessing there is, internal move to be made, right? Where O'Neal or Cleveland goes to left tackle. If it's O'Neal, it could be Rashad Hill or Udo to right tackle. The point being is, I do think, as much as we might disagree, the Vikings probably have some plans that go beyond you've got to draft one. The one thing I do think that we will see, and I looked this up. So Spielman became GM after the debacle of 2011. So I think it was January of 2012. And I looked this up last night. So as GM of the Vikings, he has made 93 picks. He has taken two quarterbacks. Teddy in 2014 and Nate Stanley in 2020. Ponder was his pick, but that was when he was, I think it was vice president of football something. Yeah. And Les had some say in that draft, and that's the draft where he took Ponder in the first round. McNabb was then Frazier's guy who was signed, or I'm sorry, traded for. But my point being is, so as GM, this guy has had 93 picks and taken two QBs. I think this is a draft where they take a quarterback, probably third round.
Yeah, and it's Ben Gessling, my colleague. I think in his mock draft, he had them taking a quarterback third or fourth round.
They got a bunch of fourth round picks, so yes, that makes sense.
Yeah, and so, and I think Tom Pelissero reported today that there's three quarterbacks, the Mills kid from Stanford,
Lund
from Texas A&M, and Trask, I think was the third one, who are in that second, third round area that a handful of teams, including the Vikings, have done a lot of background work on. So it wouldn't surprise me because, you know, we talked about this. It's like, you know, at some point you got to start preparing for it. And, you know, are you going to find your quarterback in the future in the third round? You know, ideally it'd be a first round guy and it's close to, and I don't know if there's ever a slam dunk, but just the odds go down the farther you go that, you know, one of these guys is going to be successful. But it would not surprise me, though, that for them to do that, to at least, because that would make more sense than saying, okay, we're going to draft Nate Stanley in the seventh round. Nate Stanley, and you know, he's going to be project. He's going to be a camp arm, and you know,
Jake Browning, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, at least you're saying we're putting more, we have more, you know, belief that this guy could possibly be a starter someday, versus we're just going to draft a guy in the seventh round and see what happens. So it wouldn't surprise me. But I think it all revolves around it, which is what you started with, which we don't know, is the left tackle position. And if they've made up their mind, okay, Brian O'Neill's the guy, then it wouldn't surprise me if they go like that Vera Tucker as a guard in the first round, and then maybe try to draft or sign a veteran, you know, right tackle off the street, or that's, you know, that gets cut, and then you can, you know, get your defensive end and maybe draft a quarterback in the mid round. So I mean, that would make total sense to me. I don't think that's, you know, far fetched for something that they might do.
On to the Twins, my good man. On to the Twins. There is nothing worse. I'll start off by saying this, and this is bad for the Twins, it's bad for the fans, and it's bad for those of us who are looking for things to cover that are positive, which obviously gets get clicks or listeners. There is nothing worse than a bad baseball team. But my God, do they qualify as a bad baseball team right now? This has just become... I don't even know where to start, Chip, because Rocco, it's been bizarre there. He tells the media yesterday that he wasn't going to use column A in basically high pressure situations. He then brings him into a one run game, and not surprisingly, he dissolves and is terrible. This team seems lifeless. This team, and it's now to a point where I don't want to hear sample size. Like this is too much. Where do you start with this team?
Well, I was thinking about this last night. 5 years ago, after a terrible start, I called Jim Polad, and he gave me the infamous total system failure quote.
Yep.
This is sort of what it's feeling like again, yep. Where it's a little bit of everything. John, I think I picked him to win 94 games.
I went 96, Chip, so don't be too hard on yourself.
They can't hit. And here's the thing that's probably worrisome, and I think we may have mentioned this last week, but the guys that you were counting on to maybe have a bounce-back year are not having a bounce-back year. Polanco, Garver, I mean, Kepler's out, but he was struggling.
Yep.
And, you know, the bullpen is an absolute disaster right now. We knew going in that I think most people said that was the one wild card with this team because they just remade it so much and they got rid of some guys and, you know, just not completely overhauled it, but really put some new faces in key positions. And, I mean, Colomay, I was listening to the radio last night. I was out and about, and I think Corey Provis said it right. He's like, he's broken. You know,
Yes.
And I understand the analytics might have called that a high leverage situation, but if you're trailing by one run late in the game, how could that not be high leverage? You know.
Well, and it's just pressure. Like, but what I don't get, Chip, is this. Ordinarily, when a guy, as Provis said, and he's right, is broken, right, and he can't find the strike zone, you send him to the bullpen, you work with him there, you give him like 4 days off, and then you bring him in the sixth in a game where there's no pressure. Like, that made no sense to me to have him go to the bullpen the day after he imploded again. And I know he didn't throw a lot of pitches, but he still imploded. You had him go to the bullpen, and then you immediately bring him out. That was just, it's the thinking. And Rocco's not a dumb guy. He didn't all of a sudden become dumb. That's what I don't get.
Yeah, and the thing is like, you know, it's easy day-to-day, game-to-game to kind of second-guess a manager or whatever. But
of course.
Rocco's had a terrible start to this season.
Yep.
I mean, he just has. I mean, from the brain cramp the other night to his, you know, usage and just, you know, just kind of his approach, I think, with this team. And you know, and I saw his quotes last night. It's like, wow, we can't do anything to control the outcome. It's like, the hell you can.
Exactly. I thought the same thing.
I mean, what? Then get someone in there that can. I mean, it just sounded like a guy who's out of answers, just completely out of answers and befuddled by how bad this team is right now. Because, you know, I mean, I don't think anybody thought that this team was going to be this or even have it. I mean, it's just the struggles are unbelievable. And I don't want to hear that they're playing hard and doing all that. I mean, it's, you know, it's a results business, and you're a month into this, and you're right. It's not a short sample size. I mean, this is, it's alarming. They're digging a hole that I'm not sure they're going to be able to get out of.
Rocco's quotes last night post game. So he said, I finally addressed the team. I did all the talking, which, by the way, is the exact same thing he said when they were scuffling last year during the pandemic shortened year, when he sat down with the team after a loss. It was basically the exact same. But you bring up what he said, which I found to be sort of curious, which almost was like, we're working our asses off. We're working hard. The players, I told them that they're working hard. And I couldn't decide if he was telling us what he basically wanted us to think. And then privately had, you know, clearly told the player something different. But like the message that he conveyed to us from what he had told them to me wasn't what it should have been, which is we're all terrible right now. Like I'm doing a bad job.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing a bad job. We're all doing a bad job. We have to find a way. We're better than this, which they all are. So it was a very odd, like, well, they're working real hard and they're just not being rewarded and we've lost the... You've lost gut-wrenching games, but I can tell you exactly why. It's not like some weird flukes, you know? It's not like, man, you scored all those runs, and then, no, I know why. You've lost because you're not good right now, and there's no excuse for being this bad.
And Judd, I think his talk paid off. You see the start today?
Yes. As we record this, it's the bottom of the first in Cleveland. It's a day game on YouTube, which I love, and... Yeah. Buxton started with a home run. Donaldson then hit a home run. Cruz got on, and Polanco hit a homer, which by the way leads Judd. Which by the way leads me to believe that they got lit up. That leads me to believe that the manager did not say, you guys are trying so hard. That leads me to believe that he said, get your act together. I will too. And then told us something entirely different. Total guess.
Does he have that in him, though, to like lose his mind and flip over a...
You know, I'm going to tell you a story about that because my inclination would be to say, to tell you, no, he doesn't. Yeah. But I remember, so not the same person. But I remember that at some point in time during Les Frazier's time here, okay, his team went and coached in the Senior Bowl. And and Pelissero was working for us at the time. And Bill Musgrave was the OC for the team in the College All-Star game. And they allowed Tom to go in and watch Musgrave address the team. And Tom told me you would have been astounded by how different he was. Like, he was boisterous and he took control. And I mean, Bill Musgrave, I thought to myself, wouldn't hurt a fly, right? Like, he was the most. And Tom said, no, in the room with the players, it was different. So my inclination is to say, no, there is no way that Rocco has it in him to light up his team. But that being said, maybe there's another gear there that we never see.
Well,
who knows?
Yeah, I mean, whatever his approach would be, I still felt like there's too much talent on this team to be one of the worst teams in baseball, right?
Yes.
I mean, I think people would agree with that. Now, you know, I think it's fair to say, okay, what kind of player is Mitch Garver at this point? Or I still think Polanco's, you know, going to be fine eventually. I mean, he's off to a terrible start, but. I still think, but some of the guys that, you know, had big years that haven't come back, I think it's fair to question that. But I mean, you know, Kenta Maeda is better than what he's shown. And I still think Colome is better. I don't think he's just going to be unusable for the whole season. I mean, it's just something's happened to him. So maybe they get it straightened out. I don't know, but it's baffling how bad. And just across the board, and you know, hitting, bullpen, starting pitching, defense has been, you know, not very good. Just everything. I mean, it really has been a total system failure. I mean, it just hasn't been just one area that's undermined them.
Yep, and I fault them from a front office standpoint, Chip Scoggins, for two things at least. Okay, one is bullpen, because they blew that sucker up, and they basically, and there's a hubris about them that. We can go out and just find guys, right? And
correct.
And I'm not saying that there shouldn't be changes because I think that there have to be. I totally get that. You know, the Mets paid Trevor May too much. I wouldn't have paid that. So I get the guys are going to leave. But when you're just jettisoning guys right and left and you're like, oh, we'll find guys. One, that's an assumption that I think if you're going to do it as drastically as they did, goes a little bit too far for me. The other thing, Chip, is the depth. And here's where, how did you not sign, and this was a first guess for me, how did you not sign a starting caliber outfielder with Buxton's history? And that guy could have played some left field because you probably knew from day one that odds were good that Kirilloff was going to start the season off of the big league roster. So how did you not go out and find, I'm not saying an all-star player, but how did you not go and find a guy who's not J. Cave?
I know. Well, that's you know, the J.K. thing where he's played this much is just, you know, that was just them, I don't say asleep at the wheel, but just assuming he, you know, that's going to be, you could plug him in there time and again, but I mean, that's just, he can't play this much. The bullpen one is curious because do you think that will be a yearly thing where they just think guys won't be able to repeat, you know, what they're doing, or they get priced out, or... You know, like Romo, they just feel like they've had enough of.
Which I agree with. On him, I agreed. But they just let guys go. I mean, they basically tried to reconstruct it, I thought, way too much.
Yeah. And, but again, you know, you go back to the Colum A one. Did you think you performed this poorly? I mean, even though the White Sox obviously, you know.
The White Sox are laughing right now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, but the bullpen, yeah, I think everybody knew that was going to be a wild card, and obviously that's been a major, major backfire right now. But we looked at this lineup, Judd. I mean, there's track record there. These guys hitting, you know, and it's just not, I don't know, it's just not, a lot of these guys are almost automatic outs at this point.
Yeah. So, and Chip, the problem too, though, is you could go back and say now that a lot of guys in 2019 simply had career years.
Well, that was, you know,
and that's the concern.
And that was the thought coming into last year, and you thought, well, there's going to be a regression, right? I mean, Mitch Garver's not going to hit like that. I mean, that's not who he is, probably.
Sure.
Kepler, you know, I think you probably felt like there was going to be a little bit of regression, but and then last year just got all, you know, turned sideways. But it just hasn't come back for these guys with a, you know, semi-normal spring training. And so I don't know. I mean, you know, at some point, maybe the whole lineup will get back together and they'll get hot and get on a streak where they win, you know, 10 of 12 or something to you know, make this look less of a crisis as it is right now. But man, it is, it's just staggering how bad they are, to be honest with you.
Let's talk about Rocco, Chip Scoggins.
Yeah.
So I got four things this is tip of the iceberg stuff probably, but that I just wrote down that I just don't get. Okay. One, a week ago, Wednesday against the A's, Colum A allowed to throw 49 pitches. I mean, this is a guy who runs out to take out starters. And look, I might not agree, but that's sort of just him. So it's not unusual. But to allow Colum A to come back after blowing the save, right? And Smeltzer, who, look, I get it, don't love, but Smeltzer is fresh, and Colum A allowed to throw, he's supposed to be a closer, I guess, 49 pitches. Colum A then, as we discussed earlier in this pod, coming back yesterday after you specifically have said that you're going to try and dial down the pressure. Royce thinks this is nothing. I disagree completely. I think losing track of trips to the mound for Baldelli is really weird. Like, he's not a dumb guy. He's not an airhead by any means. And you just don't see that much, at all. To me, if you're going to say, well, he should be in trouble for that. It's a one. I totally get the it was a one time thing.
Sure.
But bigger picture.
But it's indicative of
exactly.
Well, and are we buying that he was actually on the phone and missed the whole Wes Johnson's trip out there? I mean, that was the thing I saw in the paper, right? That he said he was on the phone.
He said I was doing something else. Getting.
I think he said he was on the phone getting Colum A up, and or no, Stashak or whoever was.
Yeah, he said I was getting no.
Who came in?
Robles. He was getting Robles up.
Yeah,
but you wouldn't have missed. But is Wes Johnson going to go out there without, you know, Rocco knowing? And I mean, he would literally have to be turned around at the phone with his back to the field because it's
for 30 seconds.
It's a stoppage in play. Like, it's not a quick play in football or hockey, you know?
And that's the thing. It's like, how long does it take to go over there and say, hey, get Robles up?
No, I'm not buying that.
Well, how long was he having long distance, you know, conversation? I mean, how long does that take to miss an entire mound visit? So
no.
I think he was distracted and, just lost his train of thought.
But you know, he's managed distracted. See, I just think, like, I have no idea what's up here, Chipper, but that's the thing about it is everybody, and it extends to the players too. And the one thing that I brought up with Phil on Mackie and Judd on Tuesday was this one, okay? The one thing, and you know this is a big deal, and so do I. And this is not an excuse, okay? But I wonder, and we don't have any clue, I wonder what the impact of the death of Mike Bell has been. Because I will say this, I've never covered a team that had a person who died close to a season and it not have an impact on a lot of people.
Well, we go back to Mike Zimmer with
Tony Sperano.
With Tony Sperano, was it 2 years ago? 2019? or whatever year that was. And Zimmer, I think, acknowledged after the season that that really weighed heavily on him. Mm-hmm. And you also wonder too, you know, Derek Shelton, how much of an influence did he have on Rocco that first year? Just having a bench coach that you trust, yep, and can lean on and kind of help you. And that's not to say, I don't even know who his bench coach is this year, but not to say he doesn't have that. But if you have a really close, great working relationship with someone and you take that away, maybe you just don't have that extra set of eyes or ears that you trust or keeps you, you know, helps you in critical situations that you've taken that away. I don't know. There might be some of that in play. Might be just the, you know, when you listen to his or you see his quotes from last night, like I said, that sounded like a manager or coach that the losing is weighing on heavily.
Mm-hmm.
When he talked about this is the worst he's seen in baseball, he's never seen anything like it. Well, that's going to weigh on you. And yeah, so it might just be a lot of, you know, 10,000 thoughts swirling through his head right now. And it just seems like every decision he makes is backfiring at this point, you know?
That's true.
So, you know, I keep going back to, you know, and they're off to a good start today. Maybe a blowout where guys, you know, they hit a bunch of home runs will make the air feel a little less heavy, you know, so it can sort of relax because it doesn't look like – it looks like a very uptight group right now. And naturally so when you lose, what, 13 to 15?
Yeah, it's no fun.
It's gonna weigh on you.
Minnesota Timberwolves basketball. God, ooh, I love them. I love the Wolves. Just when you think, well, they stink, they'll be, you know, they might even keep that first pick. They get hot and play well. I will say this. Now, the Rockets game on Tuesday set basketball back, but the Utah games were fun.
I watched the other one, the second one.
Okay. I think that
they look pretty damn good.
That's what I was just going to say. I'll go back to, and I think I brought this up with you last week as well. I don't see any reason why this team a year from now cannot contend for a playoff spot.
I'll say this, Judd, and I don't want to discredit what they did at Utah at all, but is there anything to them maybe not getting a team's best punch?
Sure. And Mitchell's out as well. Yes.
We've seen, yeah, and they have
Donovan Mitchell's out. Yeah. But that hurts him.
Because we've seen that before, you know, where, you know, you just don't. We've seen it conversely, where, you know, whether it's the Vikings and you think they're just going to stop a team and maybe don't throw their best punch that day, whatever. But I do. There were things the other night that I really liked. I didn't see the game last night, but the Utah, the second one, where, you know, as much as I've been down, I think you two on Russell. Mm-hmm. That made sense, you know, when you saw him and Cat playing together and Edwards was, you know, driving to the hoop and it looked like they had some firepower to them and they were engaged defensively. McDaniels obviously gives them something unique defensively and he's, you know, he digs in there. So, I mean, there, if they get to keep that pick and you can add, you know, I still say point guard. I think others will say, you know, take the center from USC and get a big to pair with Cat and keep Russell. You know, that'd be intriguing too. But Mobley, I think, yeah, Mobley.
Yep,
you're right. I mean, but the West is so darn good, and I still go back to Judd. You need to see more of it, and you need to see more defense consistently,
yep,
before you can say, okay, this team's going to really be in the mix to make the playoffs next year.
Yep, and I am only saying contend. Like, I'm not saying make a run. Yeah. I'm saying be sniffing around and the 8th seed or the 10th seed, or I don't know what the playoff structure is going to be in 2021-22, but yeah, I'm just saying this team should be able to contend and be fun. And you know what, Chip? I mean, the sad truth is this. I just want them to be fun to watch, right?
And that's what they've been the last couple games. I mean, they, you know,
Utah games were fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's I mean, you wish you could bottle that up and see that nightly. And, you know, that's been the kind of the thing that's frustrating about them is just the lack of consistency. Like, they'll show you something and then have two games where it's just complete disaster and then show you something. So it's hard to really know, like, are they making progress or is this just kind of a blip? But I think the last couple of weeks have been progress for sure.
Yes.
I don't think that, you know, I think what you're seeing is progress now. It obviously needs to be a lot better, but at least I think it's giving Gerson and Finch an idea of kind of what they have going forward. And that's what this whole last stretch, right, was, right, about, like, put them all together, see what you got, and then decide, you know, who sticks, who goes, kind of what the game plan is. And at least they're getting to see that, like, this group together. And so you have an idea this offseason which, you know, which direction you need to go.
This does prove why coaching is important, too. Like, for all we talk about, or, you know, yeah, they can throw the team out there and, you know, pro sports. I think there's always debates about how much influence coaching has and game planning and things like that. I mean, Chris Finch has done a really good job. And, like, you can see the difference just in structure and in the plays they run and in what they do that was not there previously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, I assume he's still, some of this is still doing it on the fly, because I, you know, at this point in the season, I don't know how much NBA teams actually practice, you know, and are installing things. It's probably just is more tweaks than anything. So I'll be curious to see kind of how, you know, once they have a training camp and off season to really implement what he wants to do, how much different it looks. But yeah, I mean, at least it's, you know, Russell still takes some shots that drive me crazy.
Oh yeah.
But like, oh, yeah. Man, when he gets on the roll, it's, you know, they can be tough to defend, because, you know, obviously Cat, he had a couple moves the other night, Judd, the step backs or the pull up threes. I mean, you just don't see that too often.
Oh, the talent's off the charts.
Yeah. He has such a unique skill set that, man,
absolutely.
You hope you get to see that built around a winner. Like, how fun would it be if this team actually, you know, won and was relevant, and, you know, this would be a basketball town, but they have to, you know, they got a long way to go to get to that point.
Chip Scoggins, I have, as we do this podcast, breaking NFL news for you.
Uh-oh.
A trade that very well will alter the way that the draft unfolds in the first round Thursday night.
All right.
According to our buddy Tom Pelissero, the Carolina Panthers are trading quarterback Teddy Bridgewater to the Denver Broncos for a sixth-round pick, per a source.
Really?
So George Payton, who, really? Of course, was Spielman's assistant, gets Teddy in Denver, and Payton had just taken over, what, in the spring as the
Carolina pick
GM. Now. So Carolina, well, no, a sixth-round pick.
So they're
still picking. So, but they've got Darnold, and now they've traded Teddy to the Broncos. The Broncos are picking ninth in the first round. But the point being is, I assumed that they were going to feel the pressure to find a replacement, possibly for Drew Lock, with that ninth pick. Now that's likely off.
So does that mean somebody jumps up to Denver's spot to try to get one of those quarterbacks?
That's a possibility, or they fill a different need. But that is an interesting.
So that's one less quarterback probably that goes in the top.
Well, that's one less team that needs a quarterback, so you might be right. The Broncos might trade back.
Well, yeah, one less team. So now, yeah, if there's no trades, but I got to imagine someone is going to see, hey, Justin Fields or Trey Lance, because the top three are going to be Lawrence, Wilson, Mac Jones.
Well,
do you think the San Francisco?
I can't buy that one. Like, I keep seeing it, and I know that there's a chance that Shanahan thinks he's Cousins 2.0, but I just keep thinking it's going to be Trey Lance. Might be totally wrong.
Yeah, well, one of them there, and then so then you'd have
Fields,
you know, Fields and either Mac Jones or Trey Lance.
Yep.
To go to. Where Atlanta's going to take? They got to find.
They're being mocked.
Ryan's
Kyle
backup, right? Don't you have to find Ryan's backup or successor? I mean,
they pick fourth, and they're being mocked. Kyle Pitts a lot.
Boy, when do you start thinking about turning the page to quarterback there?
So Pitts did an interview with somebody on Tuesday, Chip, and he said he thinks, and I don't know if he's lying to create a smokescreen or if he's been told this by the Falcons. He thinks that the top four picks will be quarterbacks. So he thinks what you just said will happen.
I think so. I mean, don't you? I think at some point you got to find Matt Ryan's successor. So then that would be four. And then, yeah, the next spot would be that Denver one. So,
yeah, because it goes Bengals. So it goes Bengals, Dolphins, Lions at seven, Panthers at eight, and then
Denver at nine,
Broncos at nine, Cowboys.
So maybe that's where Bill Belichick trades up and gets
okay,
one
so,
of them, right?
Yeah. So three teams that I think could trade up. Okay. 15, the Patriots, which you just said, which I agree with. 19 is Washington. They need a quarterback badly.
Sure, yeah.
So I could see them trying to trade up, and the 28th team picking is the Saints, who I could see them doing it.
Boy, what would it take for them to come all the way up from 28?
Well, but Sean Payton's crazy. Like, he'd give up a draft. Like, he would trade most of a draft to get a quarterback.
Boy, that's interesting. Yeah, that's, George Payton reunited with Teddy.
He's got Zimmer's guy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, that shakes stuff up a little bit.
So yeah, so there. So
rip
yeah.
up the mock draft.
Well, I do think you're right about. I do think that you're right though. I think that for all there's been smoke screens and talk about possibly if Mac Jones goes third, possibly Lance or Fields free falling and or both. Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think somebody comes up within that top 10 and gets him. I don't see the Aaron Rodgers thing happening.
Not any. Well, I'm not saying it's never more, but I just think there's such a temptation to to get that guy that you know. I think teams are like, well, you know, we can't wait, or this guy's not going to fall. Somebody's going to jump up and get him. So, boy, it that shakes things up though. It'll be interesting to see, you know. Who comes up because this is Belichick, right? This seems like a total Belichick thing to jump up and get that nine pick and take one of them there, whoever, you know.
Absolutely.
But I think it all depends. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what, you know, I think they're kind of the key, right? I mean, that's how it could.
Yes.
Well, I guess San Francisco is which one they take, but if Atlanta is going to.
Or if the Vikings are robo-doming us, Chip Scoggins.
Well. How fun would that be? That's what we were talking about with Royce the other day is how different a draft is in your town when you know your team's taking a quarterback.
Yes, good or bad. Good or bad. Yes, you're right.
Good or bad, yeah. So, yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be fun.
Awesome stuff, sir. Talk to you next week, okay?
All right, brother.
Thanks, Chip Scoggins.